Hi, ZJ. We're good to go.
Perfect. Perfect.
All right. So let's start with your year of graduation, including if that was spring, summer, fall, and your major or majors.
Okay. So I graduated in 2011, mm-hmm. And I majored in composition, a bachelor's in music and composition, with a minor in conducting.
Very cool.
Contemporary conducting.
Was that the spring of 11?
Yes.
Cool. All right. And what was your principal instrument?
Our principal instrument was guitar. I guess you could say still is.
Excellent. All right. So we will get to your history later. But for now, tell us about your current job. Where do you work? What do you do?
Okay. So currently right now, I work for Dell EMC Technologies based here in the Round Rock Austin Metroplex. And my official title is Engineer to Product Technologists. And so what we do is we assist the sales organization and provide pre-sales technical support for enterprise products for multiple segments of the business. And so what I mean by enterprise products, if you're familiar
enterprise
with...
Enterprise being very large corporations.
Yes. So we, I'm basically responsible for validating and configuring and architecting server storage and networking for large companies, so to speak.
So... And just curious, does this mean that it's essentially the Dell/EMC system that is like hosting this functionality that you're working on? Or are you sort of making sure your products work on their computer system?
Both.
Okay.
Both, actually. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you end up going to the customer site, or are you able to do it all from your desk?
So I am inside, and it's all done from our desk, all done via phone, mm-hmm. And also via email. There are a handful of instances where we will do live meetings, similar to this, but in a office meeting room type setting. I do a lot of presentations virtually via PowerPoint or, actual live video feed.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So you said that you handle multiple different products then?
Yes, correct.
You might give me a number like that. How many products are you an expert on?
Oh, man. You know, the Dell Enterprise portfolio, you know, if you go SKU by SKU, it's definitely over 100,000 SKUs. It is astronomical. But, you know, that encompasses so many type of servers, networking switches, and also storage arrays and cloud and client computing.
Gotcha. Oh, and by the way, you say you're title engineer, too. I feel like my wife works in tech. I feel like the numbers, that's sort of like a rank. I think it usually goes like 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yes. Yeah.
Or 4 is the highest, so you're...
Yeah.
Yep. I feel like it hurts. Sometimes they swap out a title like junior, standard, senior, principal.
Yeah. Yep. So it's funny you mentioned that because it goes 1, 2, and then senior engineer and then principal engineer is the I guess, top rank.
So that's essentially the 4.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Got it. Dell's a pretty big company, right? Or Dell EMC, was it 10,000 employees or more?
I would definitely say more than that. They are headquartered here in Round Rock, Austin. Mm-hmm. But they also have corporate offices in New York City, Nashville, and Oklahoma City, as well as in Ireland and Paris and Germany. And, you know, worldwide, we're probably maybe around 40,000 employee mark, I would say.
Wow. And Let's see, how many are on your office slash campus?
Oh man, it's by the way, I should do a disclaimer real quick. I have a 10-month-old son. so if you hear some child noises, that's what's going on. He's having a
I kind of figured. It's all good.
I'm sorry. What was the question?
I was asking, how big is... Because sometimes people could work for an enormous company, but they're in an office with 30 people.
Yeah, no. We're massive. We have 7 buildings that we work out of, and I'd probably say 10,000 of them, 10,000 employees are centralized in the Round Rock offices.
Gotcha. Now, are you on a specific, I feel like often software people are on teams, so are you kind of on a certain team of tech support people?
Yes, I am. So I cover the way Dell maps out their clients is via territory within the United States, within North America. Mm-hmm. And so my team in Round Rock, we cover all of the central accounts. So that ranges anywhere from about, South Carolina all the way to Texas. And Oklahoma City, they cover the West accounts. So everywhere from, Washington to New Mexico to Colorado, Montana, mm-hmm. All the way, I believe, up to Ohio. And then Nashville, they cover all of the East accounts, which is basically North Carolina, Pennsylvania, all the way up to Maine.
Got it. How many folks are on your team?
So on my team specifically, we currently have 6.
Okay. So how much, because I imagine maybe one of those 6 is the principal person and a senior mm-hmm. person and then some more junior people. How much do you, are you working together with people on the team, getting trained, getting advice and all that, and how much is the work just done sort of in parallel?
Gotcha. A lot of the work, I guess I should start this by saying I learned a lot from my peers. Mm-hmm. And Dell is very good about maintaining their employees. So a lot of my team members are much more tenured than I. They've been around 10, 12, 18 years.
Of course.
So I do learn a lot from them. And Dell has been around for a long time. So, if there's a question or if an end user has a legacy Dell system, from 2008 before I was at Dell, I would, ask them about that specific product because, they may not remember, but they probably know something that I do not.
Sure. So those are the first part. So then kind of how much work are you, of the work, do you sort of bounce stuff off your colleagues versus are you just sort of at the point when you're able to sort of do everything on your own? Or are there specific, you 3 people deal with this company?
Right. So the way that it is mapped out on our team is we have a team of 6, and each of us specializes in a specialty, basically. We have 2 team members who specialize in modular servers, and we have two guys that specialize in storage infrastructure, and then I myself and another team member specialize in what they call hyper-converged infrastructure and virtualization and all that. So when we intercept a request, when we intercept a project, we will figure out what are the exact needs, and if there's multiple needs that are in each of our specialties, then we will team together to work to build this one solution for this company. Got it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. Okay. I'm going to ask a really sort of stupid-sounding question here, but let's define a task, right? As something where you could say, okay, done, right? Someone's get this software to work at this platform. You're you get to work on a platform, done. Or someone says, hey, this isn't working. You're like, okay, you need to change this code. They're like, thank you, done, right? So how many times per month, or if you wish, per year, do you say done, right? Like, how many tasks are, because I could see people where it might be two a year and others where it might be 200 a week.
So there's a couple aspects to that question. So we as a team work through a mailbox internally within Dell, and requests are sent to that inbox to our central team. And a description of what the sales rep is needing, a description of what the company's needing, just a big project in general, is sent to that box. And so those requests will take a lot of more time, but we also get a lot of one-off requests where a sales rep will send a request saying, hey, this customer needs help building the server online. Can you give them a call? And it's usually a 20, 30-minute call. Some things may be a little confusing, or they haven't ordered a server in 4 years and things have changed. So those are kind of one-off, typical one and done, move on to the next thing. So that happens on a daily basis. The second part to that question is, we are also in a chat feature internally with Dell. And what that means is if a sales rep or if a manager has an enterprise question, if they need a part number or a SKU, or they need help clarifying something, they can send in a chat, and our entire team is set to a live round robin chat. And they can ask a question, and it'll get shot out to one of us, and then we'll answer the question real quick, give them, a SKU, whatever the question is, and be done with that and move on through the rest of the day.
Gotcha, cool. By the way, again, I do ask people how much they're paid, but in terms of the structure of your pay, I'm guessing this is a salaried position.
This one is, yes.
Yep. And about how many hours a week do you work?
I would say a solid 40. Sometimes, a little bit longer if a, customer needs to have multiple calls, or if they set a call for, 4:30. Sometimes they can last an hour. Sometimes they can last an hour and a half. So it's really dependent on what is needed. But I would say 90% of the year, 40 hours a week.
Yeah, a little spillover, a little flexibility. Sure. No, I get it. My wife works in tech, so.
For sure.
All right, sure. And hey, could you sort of take us through your typical day?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I wake up, shower, get ready, drop off the baby, kiss the wife, head to work. It's usually maybe a 10, 15-minute drive. I get into office right around 7:15, 7:10, Central Standard Time. I log into our chat feature, log into our Moxie box, and then continue what I was working on with the day before, see what calls that I have today and tomorrow.
Quick question, because I know some tech jobs there's a lot of flexibility on hours, but I'm guessing that because you have this direct supportive role, that there are certain hours you really need to be there.
So our team is set up, we have three shifts, I guess you could say. So two of us are from 7:30 to 4:30, myself included, and then 8 to 5, and then 8:30 to 5:30. And so we shut off at 5:30.
Gotcha. Okay, so go on. So you get to work.
Right. Get to work. Follow up on any emails. Sometimes, if there is a revision needed or a it's something needed from a prior request, that will be sent to our internal box, and we'll answer those requests. Meetings, trainings, typically happen between, you know, 9:30 and 11:30. I would say maybe there's...
When you say trainings, do you mean you getting trained or you providing training?
Both, actually. Both. We're constantly, and especially with tech, you know, once you learn one product, there's a new one on the horizon, right?
Right.
And also providing training. Each week we have a basically like a general overview of what's happening, what's coming, any things that have gone in end of life. And that is pretty much open seating for any of the sales reps that want to come in during that time. And if they have any questions, that's what the time is set for.
Sure. So, all right, so that was the training.
Mm-hmm. And then lunch is an hour. Sometimes I eat at the desk. Sometimes I'll take the whole thing, and then come back and pretty much work through the box. If there's any scheduled calls again, those calls, and you know, that's pretty much it. I mean, it kind of changes from week to week what is on your daily schedule,
sure.
But essentially. Calls, training, and getting training, and of course team meetings and such are pretty much the backbone of my weekly schedule.
Got it. Sure. So, I guess one criteria that you had to hit in order to qualify for these interviews is mm-hmm. that you enjoy what you do. So
I do.
Yeah, and I'd like to sort of if you could articulate what is it. About being, you know, a tech support engineer that you enjoy.
Yeah. So I like being that go-to person. If anybody has a question, I either know it off the top of my head and have to explain it, or I'm an answer seeker. If it's something, you know, a little one-off or there's some ambiguity to it, I'll do the best I can to figure it out. And it's nice to be able to help the sales organization meet their quota, meet their numbers, and close the deals.
Mm-hmm. All right, very fair. All right, mm-hmm. So hey, let's take it back to 2011 now.
Okay.
Officially at Berkeley, I'd be kind of guessing you weren't thinking tech support engineer. Could be wrong. Let's say, put us in your headspace as you were wrapping up Berkeley, and we'll take it one step at a time from, you know, there to where you are now, both what you were doing and kind of where you were at mentally in terms of thinking about your career. And I would also add that most people, their story's logical starting point is around graduation. Sometimes you have people where their story has a logical earlier starting point. And if you feel yours does, we can go back earlier.
Gotcha. I don't think I would need to go back before graduation. I mean, music has been in my life. I was, you know, raised on music. I come from a musical family.
That's cool. No, I'm saying, like, yeah. You know, occasionally I get someone who's like, I was really into computers, but then I decided to do Berkeley, yeah. And then, you know, but...
No, it's actually been a very interesting journey. So once I graduated in the spring, I left Boston and came back home to Austin, Texas, born, bred, and fed.
Okay.
And I was here for about a month or two, mostly to save up money to go to the big city, to go to New York City. It's something that I wanted to do. I wanted to live there. I wanted, you know, just start from the bottom and see, you know, what work is out there.
Gotcha. Ed, when you say save up money, did you get some, like, job working in a store or something?
Yeah. I worked for a big pizza delivery entity here in central Texas. And the way you order pizza with them is you basically call into a call center and then you spread that order to the correct store. And so that's what I did for a few months.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So sure, live at home, do a little work, nothing glamorous, but you're saving up some money to go to New York. Then what? Do you go to New York?
So I had a friend that was currently residing in Staten Island, and I lived with them for a couple weeks, rent-free, very graciously, until I, one, found a job, and two, found a place to stay. You know, from my experiences living in Boston and living in New York, in order to really find a apartment, you got to have first, last, and security deposit rent,
right,
which, you know, to a 22-year-old is a huge sum of money. So I found a place in Brooklyn, and I got a job at Barnes & Noble at the Union Square location. And I'm not sure if you've ever been there, but it is a massive four-story Barnes & Noble location. And I worked in the music and DVD section. And their CD section was massive. I would probably say it was the biggest one in the country, definitely the biggest one that I've ever seen from any Barnes & Noble.
Wow.
Yeah, it was huge. And they had a huge classical section, which is, you know, obviously something that I was very familiar with, being a comp major. And so I got to kind of manage that. You know, they do, you know, staff picks and things like that. But the majority of my responsibilities was being a cashier, but also taking in inventory and organizing everything.
Okay.
So
sort of music-ish, albeit not the most creative.
Right. So from there, I really tried to jam with anybody I could, and the way that I went about doing that was basically going on to Craigslist and looking at musician connection ads. And I mean, it was as close as you can get to blind dating, really, to see if anything hit. And, you know, there were some cover bands that I played with for a while. There were some original bands that I played with for a while. Because that's, you know, I wanted to stay active in music. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, working to pay rent definitely took a lot of the time away from that.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, so how long are you working there at Barnes & Noble?
So that was from, August, July of 2011. Mm-hmm. And then I left around April 2012. I wasn't really sure exactly what I was supposed to be doing. I know funds were running very tight. And I kind of became homesick, frankly. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to, you know, pack my bag up and head back home.
New York wasn't what you thought it would be, or?
No, it was not, man. It definitely ate me alive, for sure. Yeah.
Sure. All right. So you went back. For what it's worth, just as a side, I feel like you're maybe the sixth person I've spoken with who's been in Austin. And every person I've spoke with prior to now raves on about how awesome Austin is and what a great music scene there is.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, it's always been like that. You know, when I was in various bands in high school, the clubs were so open, and this was really before this, we're talking like 2005, 2007 timeframe, mm-hmm. where, you know, you could be under 21 and be able to go into a bar and listen to music, any night of the week. And so the bands I was in, we would play once, twice, sometimes three nights a week, down on Sixth Street. There's so many venues and bars, but, you know, really since, you know, when I came back in 2012 and I hadn't really been home for a long period of time, I noticed the city had definitely changed for sure. It became a very, I guess, big boy city. You know, once F1 came into town and there were so many tech companies here now, and, you know, the skyline changed. But yeah.
Sure. Yeah. No, I've heard it's very prosperous these days.
Yeah, for sure.
So, okay. So, yeah. So what happens then? You're back in Austin. I imagine the first step is to go back home until you sort of get your footing.
Yeah, exactly. So I moved back in with mom and dad. And I became a line cook. It's kind of been a secondary passion of mine, to cook. And so I wanted to try it out professionally. And so I did that for about a solid year.
Flaunting my ignorance, what's a line cook?
So I was a cook at a restaurant. And I guess they call it a line cook because the way the kitchen is set up is basically in lines.
Okay.
Yeah. So I worked with a chef. I worked with the sous chef, and, you know, it was a very different job than anything that I have had before. Super fast paced, long hours, you know, standing all day. Not so much the hours worked, you know, kind of bartender's hours, getting off at, you know, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. type hours.
That's exhausting.
Yeah, it is. It is. So during that time, within that year, I really didn't do much performing. I was doing a lot of writing at that time. You know, just small things, nothing that got performed or copyrighted, really. And then right around, I would say, March 2013, I was still living at home. You know, I was in my early 20s. I'm not sure how old I was then, 22, 23, maybe.
Yep.
And I wanted to try and make more money. There's really not – being a cook isn't a very lucrative job.
Right.
Frankly, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's usually not something you go to college for.
Exactly, yeah. So I basically wanted to move out of my parents' house and be financially independent, have a place of my own, you know, not to have any roommates because, you know, since I moved to Boston and to New York, I've always had roommates. So I decided to get into sales. I decided to get into car sales. And the reason for that is my father has been in the car business since before I was born. He's GM'd, he's owned dealerships, he's been director, you know, he's sold, he's pretty much done it all, 30 plus years in the business, and is still currently in the business. And so I wanted to try that. I wanted, you know, basically try to make money and get into sales.
Sure.
And I did that for about 2.5 years.
So did you get a job at one of his dealerships then?
So at the time he was working for a corporate entity called Group One Automotive. Mm-hmm. And they are a global 500 company and they have, you know, hundreds of dealerships across the world. And they have a anti-nepotism law. He couldn't be my manager, which was basically what he was. So within the Austin vicinity, they own a handful of dealerships. So I was able to work for the same entity, but at a different dealership.
Yeah, did I imagine he probably helped put in the word and get you hired there?
Yeah. He, you know, told me to go talk to so and so, and you know, he knows everybody in town. So, you know, he's created quite a reputation.
Gotcha. So you worked, you said you were selling cars.
Yes, exactly.
And how did that go?
So it was interesting, man. It was, I learned a lot about how I work. I learned a lot about people. I learned a lot about finances. You know, I was selling cars in the middle of South Central Austin, which, you know, the demographic is so vast. You know, there's very, very high income wealthy, and then there's, you know, very low income, you know, customers that you intercept, and you have to be able to adapt to both of those type of personalities.
Sure. Which company were you, which cars were you selling?
So
New cars, used, Toyota, whatever.
So, both really. So, I started out at, Maxwell Ford on the Motor Mile. And so the Motor Mile is a stretch along I-35, which is like the major highway in Austin, that is a mile long. And within that mile, there's pretty much every manufacturer you can think of. And so I started out at Maxwell Ford, and then about halfway through, about a year later, they purchased the Kia store, literally two dealerships down, and they transferred a handful of us to Kia, and I was one of them, and I sold Kias for a while. Now, in terms of new and used, that's what I liked about this company is that it was an open floor plan, so you were able to sell new and used. There wasn't a separate used department, and there wasn't a separate new department. So that's not very common from most dealerships that I've been to, but I think it's definitely a perk that made selling a lot easier.
Sure. So you said you were there for 2.5 years or so?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so how did that evolve?
So I was making good money. I was liking what I was doing. You know, I was kind of following in my dad's footsteps, this and that.
And you had your own place at this point.
I had my own place. You know, I was like, within the first month or two, I was like, Mom and Dad, I'm moving out. And so that was fun. I had a lot of fun that year. I went out with my friends. And I would say at this point in time, my musicality really started to dissolve quite a bit.
Go on.
Mostly because I was working from open to close almost 6 days a week.
Open close is more than 8 hours then?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, I was working upwards of 60 hours a week.
Wow.
And the thing is you get out exactly what you put into the car business. It's, you know, of course there's the team vibe and, you know, salesmen have their own type of swagger and this and that, but it is a very individual, job, I think, because the dealership gives you the training, they give you a building and they give you a desk and they say, go sell us cars. You know, and there were good months and there were bad months. They were very strict. It was a revolving door. There was constantly people coming and going.
Right. You know, you didn't hit a quota for a few months and you're out, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, for a month, basically you're out. Yeah. So it was definitely, I was growing up, I guess you could say, really learning the way the real world works, so to speak, you know?
But it sounds like you said you had so much focus and that was so intense that music sort of, when you did get off work, you weren't really in the mood to do music.
100%, yes. Yep. Yeah.
No, it happens. Understood. So
it does.
Yeah, so you're not selling cars anymore, although we might still be having this conversation if you were.
Yeah.
So what changed?
So I had friends who worked for Dell, you know, when I started selling cars. They had been there for about as long as I started the car business, a year, 2 years. And the thing is when when a major corporation is in your hometown, a lot of the people you grew up with end up working for that corporation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you know people, right?
Right.
And so my buddy was telling me, like, man, you need to get this awesome work-life balance, which was basically non-existent in the car business. And, you know, there's these benefits, you know, they got positions open, sales positions. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to try this. Let me see if it's, you know, I don't really know anything about Dell besides they make monitors and PCs and, you know, just the general stereotype of what Dell is.
Sure. Can I ask, but just to throw a side question, because you've mentioned a few times your friends there. Were these like mostly friends from pre-college, Berkeley people, or people who you met after you went down there after you graduated?
Nobody I knew from college. They were all high school friends and people who I met after graduating.
Gotcha.
Coming back home, yes.
Gotcha, no problem. So they're saying, hey, you got to work at Dell. You have better work-life balance, right? Great company. You're like, hey, that sounds good.
Yeah, exactly. So I interviewed, and initially I didn't get the job. I think I interviewed in like December of 2014.
Had a friend specifically like referred you, put in the word for you and stuff, or was this more this them telling you in general, go apply?
No, it was a official referral from a friend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that has always been the case from here on out. You know, it's definitely a who you know type thing.
Sure. Okay, but you say but then you don't get the job.
Right.
And was this a sales job?
Yes, this was a technical sales job. Mm-hmm. Correct. So a handful of months go by, and I'll probably around May of 2015, April, May of 2015, I apply again. And my friend was like, hey, I'm going to give you another referral. You need to talk to this person. They got a new manager. They're trying to do all this different stuff. Because at this point, this was when Dell went private again, when they bought back all of their shares from Wall Street. And so I interviewed. I think it was like a two-round interview, including a phone interview, and I got the job. And I was excited, and I wanted to do this, and I kind of was curious of what my dad would think about it, because he was, you know, he's been in sales his whole life, and, you know, we were kind of on that path together. But, you know, I had a heart-to-heart with my pops, and he was like, hey, like, you know, don't do this for the rest of your life. Get out while you can. Enjoy your life, you know, get a life other than being at the dealership every day. So I kind of took that and I ran with it. And ever since 2015, I've been with Dell.
Gotcha. Now, sorry if I missed it. Did you say you were hired to a technical sales job?
Yes, I was hired to a technical sales job.
So how did you sort of progress from tech sales to tech support?
Right. So that's a whole nother internal story too. So they provided you a lot of training. They really invest in their employees, which is great. Mm-hmm. You know, and coming from the car business where, you know, there was a, you know, new hires weekly. It was something that was very different to me, and they wanted to retain their talent and train their talent. And so that's what they did. We went through an 8-week training course, you know, learning the ins and outs of server storage and networking. It was a learning curve for sure. But they do verbal test outs, and, you know, it's pretty intense those first 8 weeks.
What do you mean verbal test outs?
So they would basically ask you questions that a customer might ask you.
Mm-hmm. I got it. And you had to be able to respond.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. So I caught on very quick to the technical side. And for about maybe 4 or 5 months after that, you're not given a quota just yet. You're given a team, basically, a sales team that you work in conjunction with. And, you know, you're not an intern, but the role is almost like an intern for your team, but you're still getting paid. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. And so the manager...
I was going to say, I feel like a lot of tech sales jobs have a pretty solid salary and then commission is on top of that.
Yes, absolutely. It was in the car business, there was no base pay. But with Dell, there is a base pay. It was a 70-30 split at the time. So it was definitely a major pay increase for me, but it was more important to have the steadiness of pay.
Sure.
Because, you know, being in the car business, you can, you know, sell the exact same amount of cars within 2 months, but end up making half of the gross, you know? So there wasn't a lot of consistency there. But with Dell EMC, there was you had your base pay, and that was it, and you had a quota, and you know, you did your damnest to make it.
Mm-hmm. So you say you're effectively the intern, but you're being paid for the sales team. You did right. Well in the training, so yeah, then what?
And so towards the end of 2015, the beginning of 2016, when the fiscal year started over, I told the manager, I was like, hey, I'm ready for an account set. I want to, you know, be my own rep and, you know, move forward. And so he did that. I got onto his team. I was set with a $3 million quota. I had accounts in, Nebraska, a little bit of Kansas City, Missouri, and Oklahoma. And the accounts range from, you know, universities all the way to oil and gas to independent school districts. There's a whole array of accounts. And so I did that for an entire year and I did very well in it. I exceeded over 100% for the fiscal year of 2016. And then,
that's great. You must have been doing really well for yourself.
I was doing great. And, you know, on a personal note, I got married. I fell in love. I bought a house. I got a car.
Wow.
And at this time.
You're an adult.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Things change. Things happen pretty fast. And I was doing music. I was playing in a band. A couple of my friends that I went to Berkeley with actually had moved down to Austin within this time. And so we were, you know, practicing, we were writing music, we were playing shows. It was great. It was awesome. Yeah. So that void that had been empty, for quite a while had definitely became filled. And I kind of understand now what my dad meant of advising me to get out of the car business. Because, you know, it is lucrative, but it is your entire life. And again, on a personal note, you know, my dad really, he wasn't there all the time at my ball games, but, you know, we never did without, you know, always had a roof over my head, toes on the back of my back, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the things that I've become to enjoy the past few years. So, yeah.
But you're doing well in sales, but you're not currently in sales. So what was the transition then?
So the transition was at the end of 2016, starting in 2017, my manager said, hey, you can take this other position. It would be a promotion, or you can get a higher profile account set into sales. And so I was kind of given a fork in the road.
Right, higher sales or more techie.
Exactly. And he was like, if you want to stick on my team, I got this account set for you. You know, it's yours if you want it. But if you want this other techie role, you have to go in and interview for that. So I interviewed for that with that manager. Mm-hmm. I was given an offer, and it was good.
Was it a step up then from how you'd done in 2016? Yeah.
Yes. And so the pros and cons of making this decision, and this is, you know, right when we were about to purchase the house, mm-hmm. Was that it was salary. I wasn't based on a quota. I didn't have a base. My entire salary was what I would make if I made 100% of my sales.
Right. So you now know that you can make the mortgage payments.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. exactly. Yeah. So it was nice to have to be offered that. Pardon my dog, right? We have some family coming over today. Anyway.
It's real life.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that would, and I liked what the team was doing. I had some colleagues that I knew on that team, and I ended up taking that position, and I've been with it ever since.
Got it. Just curious, did you start as a tech one and get bumped up to two, or did you start as two?
Yeah, I started out as a one, and then I got the two back in September, October of 2018.
Oh, very cool. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Dell has a pretty specific rule that whenever you make a transition or whenever you get a promotion, you're basically stuck for like 16 or 18 months, whatever the rule is.
Sure, sure. Yeah, larger institutions often have more rigid rules.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hey, Berkeley, they have it lined up that, you know, after promotion, it's like, I think when I got associate professor, they're like, and in 8 years, you could make full professor. It's like, okay.
Oh, man.
See you in 2023.
All
right.
Yeah.
So, okay, cool. And here you are.
Yeah, here I am, and we're still living in the same house. Everything's great. My wife works, so she doesn't work in tech, but she works for a tech company. But she does HR for that.
Gotcha. No
company.
Absolutely, it's a good feel. I've spoken with a couple of people who are HR in tech.
So, yeah.
Good place. Very cool. So at Dell or a different one?
So I don't want to name it, but it is an affiliate of Dell. They own a, you know, big chunk of the company that she works for.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. So, all right, we'll move on to the third part of the interview of three. So my next question for you is these days, meaning, say, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
What, if anything, is your current relationship with music?
You know,
and I know you have a small kid.
You know, man, yeah, that's exactly it. You know, I'm kind of back into the 2013 to 2015 life where I'm not doing anything musically at the moment. I was in a band before with some friends, and we were playing, you know, a couple times a month. We put out a little EP demo. We went to the studio. But my son was born in July of 2018. Best thing that has ever happened to me. I love being a father. It's awesome. It's great. But it does come with a whole mound of new responsibilities. And so music kind of had to take a backseat at that point, sure. Especially, you know, within the first month or two.
Yeah. No, yeah. I get it. So, sure. Next question I have for you then is thinking about your current role as a tech support engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say there are many tech support engineers out there. I'm sure there are others who also got a music degree, but they're a small minority.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all. So, and there's certainly other paths to what you're doing. But all that said, like, when you look back at your Berkeley education experience, is there anything you feel that Berkeley experience did particularly well to prepare you for what you're doing now relative to if you'd gone to UT?
First of all, hook 'em horns, diehard UT fan. pretty much the majority of my family, my sister, my dad, my grandparents, aunts, uncles have all gone to UT.
I wasn't disparaging UT. That was just, you know.
We're definitely Longhorn blood. Anyway, you know, it's that question is pretty relevant because I was in the car with my mom yesterday and I was telling her about this interview and she was like, well, you know, I think Berkeley has really, you know, helped you get to where you are now. And I was like, you know, it absolutely has that experience. And I think just being a musician in general, because, you know, I think the big argument with, you know, even music being in school and, you know, teaching your kids music at a young age is the delay of gratification to where you actually have to work and you have to study and you have to put in the hours. And it's not something that you can, you know, fake and show your friends. It takes time and dedication and rehearsal and practice to become a musician. And I think that is perpetual. I mean, for the rest of my life, I'll probably be practicing on my own, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with composition, you know? It is a language of its own. You know, every symphony that was ever written, relatively speaking, I guess past tense, you know, before the advent of like Sibelius and Finale and all that, just, you know, Beethoven wrote every single note, every single articulation, every single dynamic, every single key, every single rehearsal mark. And in composition, I think there is an extreme attention to detail for that. And I definitely take that to my work today.
So I just don't want to take words out of your mouth, but just what I think I'm hearing is what you said, that idea of, you know, putting in the work and the time and focus. But it sounds like you're also talking about that you feel like music made you more detail-oriented.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Gotcha. Is there a third thing, or are those the big two?
You know, I think the college experience in general, you know, having to meet a deadline or write a paper or, you know, to not be late. I will never forget this. There was a professor that was very adamant about tardiness. And if you were tardy, he would lock the door on you. And I remember once, maybe I was coming late from the tea or, you know, the light took too long at Mass Ave or something. And I was, you know, half a second too late. And this was in the 150 building where, you know, the windows are the size of the wall. And I, you know, he said, sorry, no, in front of the whole class. And like that has stuck with me to never be late to anything ever. Yeah. So there's things like that I've picked up on. I mean, I definitely would not be the same had I not gone to Berkeley, regardless of my journey.
Gotcha. By the way, I don't suppose you remember the name of the professor.
Mr. Yakov Gubanov. I love him to death. He was an awesome professor. He was one of my composition teachers for many classes. And that was just the one time I got the cold shoulder.
Okay, yeah. No, very cool. All right, sure. Well, hey, let's turn that question around now. Because yeah. Berkeley gives that one degree, a bachelor's in music, and you went there knowing that. And, you know, indeed, you're in a great place in your career. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all that said, when you look back at your Berkeley education, is there anything where you say, like, hey, you know, it would have been really useful to have learned this while I was at Berkeley, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't? Anything missing or incomplete?
I think the, man, that is a heavy question.
Don't hold back, man.
Yeah, I definitely think the realities of persistence and making it, you know, on your own. You know, I think my definition of success has definitely changed because I see so many of my peers doing what they love, big or small. But I wish I would have known, you know, I wish I would have known to be more persistent in my pursuit of music.
Okay. Like, yeah. like being made aware sort of how hard it was going to be, you mean, or what it was?
Yeah. Gonna... Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. No, that's very fair. Cool. So my next question for you is that, you know, it seems like it took you a few years to find your footing. And even there, when you first found your footing, it was at the car dealership. But then eventually you realized, okay, wait, it can do better than this. And then you moved to something better. Then you moved to something better again.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you... at least for a while, or in a good place, if something even better comes your way, more power to you. Point is, there are a lot of other people, maybe like you in that first year or two, where after college, they haven't yet found that path.
Right.
That's something better. And there's also, let's say, the people even at Berkeley still in their last year staring out into the big scary world and being like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? So for either or both of those groups, what advice do you have?
I would advise them to still go after their dreams. And if they don't end up where they want to be, music will still always be my number one. You know, and I think that is okay if you end up going in a different direction than what your piece of paper says at the end of the day.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Is that it, or?
Yeah, I mean, I would tell them to not give up, you know.
Sure.
If a city eats you up, save up and go back.
Very fair.
Yeah.
All right. So, and now let's focus in now, because I think you're my 167th interview.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I guess I don't know when to quit. But I want to say this could be slightly off. You're probably around my fifth tech support engineer.
Okay.
Maybe fourth, maybe fifth. I don't think anyone's listening to all 167. But who's listening to this, right, and got this far? Somebody who maybe is thinking about tech support as a career path. right? Like, it's technical, but you're not banging out code all day. You're sort of working with people and helping people, you know, but again, it also is, you know, better paying than a lot of jobs that involve helping people. So let's say there's a lot to recommend the career. If somebody, you know, who's not currently doing it is thinking like, yeah, tech support seems like a good, you know, thing to aim for. What advice do you have for them?
If it's something that they're interested in, you know, whenever I look for a new career opportunity, I want to make sure that it's something that will advance me, you know, that it's not exactly something that I've done before. And so, you know, you're right. I'm not coding out at all. But the things that are being coded on need to live on some type of hardware. And that's essentially what I do. Tech is a very vast entity. I mean, it is a huge industry, and there are so many avenues that you can take within tech, either it be services, support, outside sales, customer facing type sales. And the thing is, what I like about working with such a big corporation is that they like to, from my experiences and from what I've heard, they like to keep with their internal talent. Prime example, me going from sales to an engineering role. If I had an interest in, you know, finance or something, I could potentially, you know, move to that sector of Dell. If I was interested maybe in the more markety side of what we do sell, you know, that could be a career path in and of itself. Dell is so vast in what they offer that there is internal movement available, whatever direction I want to go in.
Got it.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great. So, hey, I just have one last question for you, which is, you have the mic. Is there anything we missed? Anything else you'd like to say?
I love Boston. I miss Boston. I inherited all of their sports teams. I'm a Patriots fan. The Bruins play tonight that I'm really excited about. I proposed to my wife in Boston, you know, Berkeley in Boston.
Is your wife a Berkeley grad, by the way?
No, not at all. She graduated from Texas State. She's, you know, from here.
Gotcha.
As well. Yeah. But I enjoyed my time. Some of the best people I've ever met were from Berkeley, and still some of my best friends that I talk to often are from Berkeley. You know, the band that I was in previously probably would have never existed had I not gone to Berkeley, because that was formulated from people that I met in college.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's great. So, hey, I really enjoyed this conversation, ZJ. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yes. Thank you, Kevin. It was, you know, it was nice to be able to spill everything out. You know, sorry if I rambled on quite a bit.
Oh, not at all. You're sort of don't take it as an insult, but I feel like this conversation was pretty average in terms of length and level of detail and all that. The people who never shut up are the entrepreneurs.
I can totally imagine. That's hilarious. That's awesome.
So great. Well, hey, look for a message from me in the very near future, and best of luck to you with everything. Enjoy the family visit.
I will do. Thank you, Kevin.
All right. Take care now.
Take care. Bye.